is extremely busy. He has to go back on Capitol Hill, and so I'm not going to waste his time. All I want to say is that I'm very honored to introduce to you the senior senator of Minnesota, Hubert Humphrey.
Good. Thank you. Thank you very much. I feel particularly honored by the brevity of your introduction because it indicates that we possibly are well acquainted. And I feel very much well acquainted with the community service people of the AFL-CIO. You'll have to forgive me for this rather delayed and harassed and harried arrival because we've been having a rather busy day in the Senate. All I have to do is to make an appointment someplace around noontime and the Senate gets busy. It's very interesting life that we live around here. Whatever you plan never happens, and whatever you don't plan is sure to happen. So if you want to know what's going to happen, just let me know, because then I'll plan something, you see, and then it won't happen, or vice versa. This morning, I had a most interesting experience, and I want to share it with you, and then I want to share one or two observations on a program or two in Congress. My first observation sharing would be about the visit that we made to what we call Junior Village here in Washington, D.C. This is a home or an institution, better to say, for children where there are family situations that necessitate the separation of children from parents or where children are just cast aside. This particular institution has been the subject of considerable attention in the press of Washington, D.C., and radio and television. And I think it deserves every bit of attention that it's getting, and it deserves some positive action. I want to comment a little bit about the action I think we ought to take. But before I do that, I should like to bring you up to date on our Youth Employment Act in the Congress. As you know, we passed this in the Senate. The vote was 50 to 34. Which is a substantial margin, a margin that ought to indicate rather popular support for the measure. The Youth Employment Act had two features. The Section 1 was the Youth Conservation Corps provision, which provides for the establishment of camps not to exceed enrollees, of 50 enrollees in said camp. These camps to provide gainful employment as well as academic and vocational and technical instruction, including on-the-job training in a goodly number of trades or occupations. The second feature of the program is the Hometown Youth Corps, which relates primarily to the employment of our trained young people in the large cities on community projects, public and projects or profit or nonprofit organizations or public institutions would be the recipients of these young people as employees. The numbers, maximum number is 60,000 in each of the groups, in the Youth Conservation Corps or in the Hometown Youth Corps. This is a good program. There are many arguments made against it. Most of them, I think, were poorly based or without foundation. The arguments made against the program was it didn't provide enough vocational training. Well, we ought to provide more and better technical and vocational training. There isn't any doubt about that for many of our young people. This is a problem for our entire school system. In fact, we need a better school system. Whatever you can say about the inadequacies of present vocational education, you can say about the inadequacies of most of education in America. And thank goodness for the AFL and CIO and others that are interested in promoting a better quality of education, not only better facilities, but better remuneration for our teachers, which in turn brings better teachers, higher standards of teaching, as well as higher standards of equipment and facilities. The argument made against the Youth Conservation Corps that it would not really alleviate unemployment is also, I think, a fallacious argument. It isn't a program designed to get rid of all unemployment amongst young people, because the answer to unemployment is a bigger and a better and a more growing economy. That's the real answer. The answer is expanded industrial base, expanded job opportunities that comes from an economy that has a gross national product in this country of at least $600 billions. If we can get our gross national product up to $600 billions, we will have really absorbed most of the unemployed. That is, at least that up to the point of what we call the real hard core, where a substantial amount of retraining and social service work is required to make persons employable. So this argument that it wasn't a good program because it didn't absorb all the youth unemployed, I think, fell by its own inadequacy. It does employ some. And what is more important is those that it does employ, it gives a meaning to life. These young people are given a chance to be good citizens, are given a chance to not only do something constructive for their country, but for themselves. They're given a chance to make a real contribution to community life, and they get the feeling of having been on a job and doing a job. A large number of young people have just never been on a job. They just never have had a chance to have a work experience. Well, I'm all steamed up about the youth employment program, but our problem now is in the House of Representatives. And anything that you can do to help us in that area will be much appreciated, not only by those of us who sponsor this bill, and I've sponsored this legislation since 1956, but it will be much appreciated if you can, by the youth of America and by the parents of America, because this program is designed to help young people, designed to help families, designed to help communities. And it's tied up presently in the Rules Committee of the House. Therefore, I do hope that any of you that have the time that you will speak out firmly and resolutely for prompt action in the Rules Committee of the House. I predict its passage. I want to go on record here now. I predict that the Congress will pass the Youth Employment Act and that the President will sign it and that this will be the beginning of a very fine and substantial program to help our young people. Now, the second item that I wanted to mention was this junior village, and I'm really, in a very real sense, I'm just reporting to you and giving you a chance to get a little insight into this nation's capital. My first assumption is that this capital ought to represent the best of America. This is the showcase, supposedly, of the United States. Practically every foreign visitor that comes to this land comes to Washington, D.C. And hundreds of thousands, millions of young Americans and Americans of all walks of life and ages come to this city. If you don't believe it, try to get into the Capitol today. The corridors are jammed. Each year there are more. And yet Washington, D.C. lacks local government, self-government. This is inexcusable. Here we tell everybody in the world that we believe in local government. We believe in self-government, we believe in the right to vote, and we deny the people in this jurisdiction, the District of Columbia, the right to vote, except in federal elections. We deny them local government, and we deny them citizen responsibility, because you can't have citizenship responsibility without exercising some of the duties of a citizen, namely the most important one, the right to vote and to govern oneself and to govern one's own city. Now, I was a mayor of a city, and I know that you can't have law enforcement unless you have law observance. And one of the reasons that Washington, D.C. is having trouble with law enforcement is because there isn't adequate community spirit, and there cannot be community spirit and community unity until you have local government in Washington, D.C. And no matter how many more policemen you hire and how many more police dogs you give to policemen, you're not going to have a law-abiding city, a harmonious city, a city that is that represents the ideals of this country, until that city governs itself and until people have to take on the responsibility of self-government. Now, this is your problem. This isn't just the problem of the people of District of Columbia. The word is getting out in the world that America's capital city is a city filled with crime, a city with serious social tensions. This, therefore, becomes as important a problem as the image of America itself in the world. We're always talking about our image. We're always talking about how people look at us and what they think about us. Well, I submit that a country that prides itself in democracy and in self-government and in elections and in social justice isn't doing very much about it in the nation's capital. And something needs to be done about it. Now, I've been a community organizer for a long time. In my city of Minneapolis, we had community councils. In every community, every ward, built around neighborhood houses. And we were able to get community citizenship participation on the part of community leaders. Why? Because it was their city, because they governed their city, they taxed themselves, they provided for their schools. And I repeat that there is little that can be done in the District of Columbia that is significant until people feel their sense of citizenship obligation here coming with citizenship responsibility, namely self-government. This is why I speak out for it. There are, of course, other things that we can do. The Congress can be much more attentive to the problems of this city, and it ought to be. But it's very difficult to get busy congressmen and senators to act like aldermen. And we ought not to have to act like aldermen. We ought not to be bothered by these particular problems. And because many senators and congressmen feel that way, we're finding this city having growing problems of government and self-discipline and community spirit. I must say that, just to digress for a moment, I came back from Mexico City about 15th of December this last year, and it was a beautiful Christmas season in Mexico City. Decorations all up and down their streets and in their parks, magnificent, a galaxy of color and light. Came back to Washington, D.C., and downtown Washington had no Christmas lights, no Christmas decorations. The Capitol, yes. The White House. But the business community, no. Now, what kind of a city is this? When there's that lack of spirit, why, the smallest town in Minnesota at least has one streamer of lights across the street at Christmas time. And yet I found right here in this beautiful city called the nation's capital, that lack of civic spirit and pride. I think this was a forebearer of things to come. So now we hear about attacks in our streets. We hear about social tension, problems, racial problems, all kinds of problems. And we're not going to get at these problems until both the Congress and the city itself makes up its mind that something needs to be done. Now, Junior Village is symbolic of this. I wish you took the time while you were here, could take the time to go out to Junior Village. It's out South Capitol, out alongside of, is it Anacostia, I believe? One of the airports that no longer is in use. And you go out there and it's, what do you find? You find what we call cottages. They're old brick buildings, 50, 60 years of age, in which anywhere from 20 to 30 young people ought to be housed, or maybe as many as 50, but in which there'll be 75, 80, 90 housed. In other words, the capacity is overloaded. The design capacity houses presently twice. Inadequate ventilation. More importantly, lack of staff. I want to say that those that are there are dedicated. I want to compliment every member of the staff that I have met at Junior Village. These people work overtime. They give of themselves, their heart, their mind, their spirit, their body. And yet I have been in foreign countries that we're helping my fellow Americans that have received buildings and equipment from the people of the United States. It's better than these young people have out here by far. Now, I'm for foreign aid, don't misunderstand me. And nothing pleases Hubert Humphrey more than to go to a country and find a children's hospital, or to find an orphanage that we're helping, or to find a school that we're aiding, we're helping build thousands of them. Federal aid, I might add, too. We're building hundreds of thousands of classrooms around the world with federal aid, and not any very many in the United States unless you've got a military camp alongside of it. Isn't it interesting? If you put a military camp over here, you can use federal money to build a school over there. But if you can't find some soldiers to put over here, you can't find any federal money to put over there. What kind of thinking is this? And we got to become righteously indignant and angry about it. And I saw this morning in Junior Village, where, for example, three-story buildings are not a fire escape. 40, 50 children. I bet that's for me. I hope not. Good. 40 or 50 children on one floor in a room not over twice the size of this room. Cots stacked within 8 inches in between. What happens if there's a fire? Now, there isn't a private club that would be permitted to have this sort of condition. But for children with no parents, or from broken homes, or from emotionally disturbed parents, or from parents that were ne'er-do-wells, children that rely only upon a friendly government, that's all the help that they have, and a friendly community. They got them stacked up there on the third floor with inadequate toilet facilities, no fire escape, no ventilation, and it's hot in Washington in the summer. No locker, no place to put their clothes. And I saw these little ones this morning. They just come running to you. They break your heart. When you go into their room, they come and put their arms around your legs. They come up and embrace you. They want love. They want attention. They are entitled to at least cleanliness. They're entitled to good health facilities. They're entitled to a good bed. They're entitled to decent clothing. And I wish you could see the clothing room in a cottage, about a fifth the size of this, with old wood shelves just jammed in. Now, they do the best they can. Don't misunderstand me. They work day and night there to keep these clothes clean. No dishwashing equipment in the old cottages. Inadequate laundry facilities. You'd think the country was broke. Yet we can build a new racetrack every 3 months around here. I made a pleasant suggestion. I suggested that everybody just forego a cocktail one night. We could buy a whole new junior village. And it isn't such a foolish suggestion at that, considering the cocktail hour that goes on in every city of America. And I'm not telling people how to live their lives. I'm just telling them how to live it a little better, because I think this could be done. So I've made some suggestions. First, more staff must be provided. There's no way out of it. The population has gone up. This is a facility that was designed for 300 and now has 700. And by 2 years from now, it'll have 1,000. So I'm going to ask the Congress for additional appropriations to increase the junior village staff. Now, there are going to be some people say, I'm a spender. That's right. I want to spend for young people. These are well-mannered little children. You ought to see them. I sometimes wish my own had been as well-mannered. They're kind, and they're well-mannered, and they're trying to do the best they can with very limited facilities. The situation there is such, for example, that when children get up in the morning to have their breakfast and go off to school, they don't even have enough bathrooms for these little ones to take care of their morning chores. Just have to bundle them up and send them off to school. They don't even have school buses, mind you. Now, they have a school on the property for some of the children, but they send a large number of the children out. Now, my boys and girls go to school in a school bus. Most children do. These ones, they take them down and put them on public bus and give them a little. The little fellows and girls never had any parental home life at all. They just got to fend for themselves. You'd think the country was bankrupt. They ought to go over and get some of those military buses they got. Plenty of them around here. I said fire escapes. They finally, in this year's appropriation, we've asking the district welfare department's asking for fire escapes. I want to tell you, we ought to find out who's responsible for not asking for them before and fire him. If I were the mayor of Minneapolis and found those conditions, which I did, I would dismiss the man that was responsible. And not only dismiss him, bring him up for charges. You ought to do that. This town needs a little more effective public service. So we'll get fire escapes at least this year. Thirdly, we need an adequate number of beds and wall lockers. Don't you think children ought to have a place to put their clothes? No place to put your clothes at all. And yet they find little hooks that they can hang some things on, but no dressers, no bureau, no wall lockers. There are dilapidated beds with springs, if you can call them that, and from some of these springs, they've made some coat hangers. mattresses, if you please, that are not clean, because it's impossible. They become wet. Many of these children are emotionally disturbed. I would think that the United States of America would know how to provide for mattresses for its own children. Now, I've been able to arrange to find, we found 325 beds and new mattresses out here at an Air Force installation. We dug these out, so to speak, and now we've made arrangements with the director of the Junior Village to go out and pick his pick of those mattresses and beds. They were going to send them down to Miami for the Cuban refugees. Now, I want to help them too, but let me be very parochial. I'm going to help Native American citizens first. They're going to get first choice on those mattresses right here in Washington before we ship them at some cost down to Miami. Then we'll have plenty of mattresses for the Cuban refugees too. I don't think the country is going to go bankrupt by providing a few beds and mattresses. And I'm asking the Welfare Department to submit a request for equipment which is needed. You know what they do? They send up a request for what they think we'll provide. I think we ought to send up a request for what is needed. And fourth, we need an immediate appropriation to begin construction of water mains, which will carry sufficient water so that they can have hot water at the Junior Village. Can you imagine, my fellow Americans, in a modern city that they haven't enough water mains out there? The water mains aren't big enough so that if they want to wash their hands or take a bath or wash their clothes, they don't have any hot water? They got enough hot water for a little while, then the hot water is all gone. Now, there are improvements, and I want to testify here that Robert Byrd, the senator from West Virginia, has been primarily responsible for these improvements. He's the chairman of the district subcommittee. He went out and he did do something about getting some new equipment and getting new cottages and stepping up the construction of these new cottages. And all you got to do is see the new cottage, which I think we ought to call Bob Byrd cottages, and see the old cottages and see the difference. And the new cottages aren't extravagant. They're made out of building block, some modest building materials, but they're clean and they're ventilated. There's no air conditioning, I might add, and Washington's mighty hot. Now, if the air conditioning is good for Congress, it seems to me like it ought to be good for Junior Village. And I know how much money we spent in the Senate office building for air conditioning, and I suggest that we might feel a little better about the Senate office building if we would provide a little air conditioning for some less fortunate people than members of Congress. Now, what are the long-range needs? I could go on this thing far too long. I'm not going to do it, but they build a building down there, a temporary building, and there's people around this town that got temporary-itis. I don't know what they think. They must think children are temporary or something. They build it, what's the name, that Harrison Hall. I believe that's it. Or Harrison Cottage. It's a temporary. The trouble is, when they built it, they forgot that the water would flow in it. It's down at the bottom of the hill, and the water comes off the roofs of the other buildings, pumped right out into the playground, not into a storm sewer, just right out onto the playground in spouts. And then the water rushes right on down into the Harrison Cottage. Now, we're developing some extra very good professional floor moppers. And there's no drain in the floor of Harrison Cottage. And there are 80 boys in Harrison Cottage for a cottage designed for about 50. I was out there with those little boys this morning. They're lots of fun. By the way, they need athletic equipment. They need athletic equipment, mind you. In a nation that prides itself on professional football, baseball, basketball, and every conceivable kind of sport, they don't have athletic equipment in the nation's capital. What in the devil's wrong around here? I think I'll have to go out and buy it myself. I just bought some athletic equipment for the youngsters down in Venezuela. Is down there, I'm going to do something for these youngsters. But they need a minimum of $1,000 worth of baseballs, volleyballs, bats, footballs for these youngsters, and something for the little girls. Not some old hand-me-downs either. Now, I think we need a long-range program, and I've made a proposal. And the proposal that I've made is for a national child care center. By the way, there's a The President's Committee on Washington, D.C. Affairs has been looking into all of these matters. The President's taken a keen interest, as you know, in the District of Columbia. Thank goodness. And this committee has made some suggestions of modifying certain welfare statutes that will make it easier to find foster homes for these children. The committee is also attempting to modify some of the more odious aspects of some of the laws which are intended to eliminate cheating on welfare rolls, but which in reality have invaded privacy. And I don't want to be misunderstood. There has been cheating, and this ought to be cleared up, because the cheaters destroy a good welfare program. And I don't think it does us any good to cry out that welfare laws ought not to be examined. There have been abuses of welfare laws, and there are people that take advantage of loopholes in welfare laws, and we ought not to let that happen. But that requires trained staff. So don't misunderstand me. The cheaters are the destroyers. But the way to stop the cheating is not to hurt the innocent, but is to have sufficient social welfare workers, sufficient number, and other staff members to ferret out those that are unworthy and to help those that are worthy. Now, there are many other suggestions, and I'm going to introduce very shortly legislation to provide a national child care center, which will be modern and will be as exemplary of what we can do as the National Institutes of Health are. Now, we have provided some very good facilities for animals, for testing particular drugs and serums and viruses and so forth. I think we ought to provide better facilities for people. And I want to see the National... National Child Welfare Center in the nation's capital that will be an experimental center in a real sense, that will provide long-term treatment and care for some of those children that have no other place to go, but primarily will give us an opportunity to work out better programs for child care. And the nation's capital, it seems to me, is the proper place. Those are some of the thoughts I have, and I've got to leave you right now because I don't want to miss a roll call vote. Will you forgive me? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Humphrey.